Hello everyone, welcome to The Living Education, your podcast about education. Today I'm with my colleague Rachel. She did also the master's with Claudio, Eves and me. And today she's going to talk about contemplative practices and education. Hello Rachel, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So tell us a bit, what do you mean about contemplative practices? What is really this about?
Sure. So contemplative practices is kind of this term that groups different practices where you're being more contemplative together. So contemplative practices include, you know, meditation, mindfulness, and yoga are some of the top contemplative practices.
Great. And what's the link with education? Why do you think those two things go together?
Well, I personally have benefited so much from meditation, mindfulness, and yoga. And there is a ton of research out there that shows that these practices have multiple benefits for children's social, emotional well-being, their physical well-being, as well as their spiritual well-being, if that's of interest. So yeah, and I think that's super important in education, because if you're practicing those things, then overall you're just going to have a happier life.
Yeah, great. And we all aim for that, I'm guessing. Great. So you also conducted some research on this topic. What was your research about, and why did you decide to think that it was an important topic to be researched?
Yeah, so I did my research on contemplative practices in Argentina, and I looked at, you know, the intentions and drivers of these practices being implemented into schools. And I looked at, you know, why are these being implemented into schools and how they're being implemented in the schools. And the reason that I was so interested in this is because I think, not only from my own experience, but also from seeing research, you know, it's not just what we do, but it's why we do it and how we do it. So yeah, I was just super passionate to find out the ways in which that was happening in Argentina, because, you know, it's super important to, at least for me, to embody the ancient values that these practices come from, you know, so whether that's loving kindness, compassion, and your social emotional well-being. However, you know, over the years, I'm sure people have noticed that, you know, meditation, mindfulness, and yoga has become a little bit more trendy. And I think that it's lost a lot of those core values and principles. So yeah, I was just really interested to see, why is this happening in Argentina? Like, what is the motivation behind it, and how is it being implemented into schools? And how are children learning it, right? Because it's not enough to just say, oh yeah, we teach meditation in schools. It's like, okay, but how are children learning it? That's going to affect the outcomes for them. It's not just the fact that they learn it.
And what did you find out? What were the findings of your research? What was actually happening in schools or in education settings with these practices?
So as I was doing my research, I had the opportunity to observe the classroom. So I got to see the children actually practicing. And I also got to interview stakeholders such as program directors and teachers to kind of get a sense of, you know, how this was being implemented into schools and why. And a lot of these program directors and teachers, of course, this is according to them and not to the children, but they reported that, you know, children were there was less bullying in the schools. There was better interpersonal relationships. The students were focusing better. Overall, like, they all saw a lot of benefits behind the practice in the schools.
Yeah, totally. This reminds me a lot of the episode we had a few months ago with our teacher in Spain, Susana, who created this program on social and emotional education, and how she integrated also yoga and meditation to really cultivate these inner emotions, but also kind of intrapersonal emotions and relations, and how important it was. Was this also a bit your stake or your vision of what is beneficial or what are the impacts of including these practices into the education systems.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely think that mindfulness, meditation, and yoga are a strong part of social emotional education and can help children become more aware of their emotions, become more aware of themselves. And as you become, you know, more aware of yourself and your own emotions, you know, it's just going to be easier for you to communicate with other children or people as well. So yeah, definitely. That's my similar stance. I believe that social emotional learning is so important. If I think about the fact, you know, when I was a kid, I don't feel like, of course I got social emotional learning, but it was more something that we were taught at home if we were lucky by our parents, right? It was like in school, it was mostly like math and reading and science, which of course are important. But now we can see that there's a lot of research out there that actually shows that social emotional learning is the number one thing that is like the base. It's like the foundation underneath anything else. So if you can master your social emotional skills, then your academic skills will benefit as well.
You can be like a better person, citizen, and it of course will ultimately have an impact on our societies that would become more peaceful, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Why did you choose to focus on Argentina? Why you thought or you felt that it was a good case study of this particular topic?
Well, I was doing my internship there with UNESCO, International Institute of Education Planning. And as I was there, I started to learn a little bit more about Argentina. And I started to notice that there was a lot. And also just working with UNESCO and like learning more about the education system there, like there is a lot of inequality there. And so I think there has been a lot of research on the benefits of meditation for children to do yoga and meditation in schools in countries such as the United States, Canada, and, you know, other countries in Europe. But there hadn't really been a lot of research on it in Argentina. Like, and, you know, if there's anything that I learned during my time with Globid, it's that what works in one country doesn't necessarily work in another, or if it does work, it might work in a slightly different way, right? Like children, every single child is unique and learns in a different way. And also like, the context matters as well, right? So since there hasn't been a lot of research in South America, I was just really interested to see, okay, like, why is this being implemented into schools in Argentina? And how is it being implemented, especially in a place with so much inequality?
What were your conclusions? Why, like, was it well implemented in Argentina? In where instances it was implemented? Was it an influence from a trend from Europe kind of migrating, or it was really out of a necessity maybe there?
Yeah, you know, it's actually super interesting because when I, you know, before I tried not to have any preconceived notions or hypotheses because I was doing a different type of research, which, you know, is more exploratory instead of having these hypotheses. I wanted to see what was really happening. But there was one thing that I thought, and I thought, oh, I wonder if this was an influence from other countries or a trend. And what I found, which I mean, it could still be the case because my research isn't the only research. When I interviewed these program directors to kind of find out, you know, why was it that they wanted to implement it into schools? And every single one of them mentioned that they had some event, like tragic event in their own life. Mm-hmm. That led them to meditation and yoga. So some sort of traumatic event, whether that was like, I think one of the program directors, he got like a phone call that his dad had a heart attack. And then like he had so much stress and like, he just didn't know how to deal with that. And then when he found meditation and yoga and saw like how it transformed his life, he was just so passionate about bringing it to schools. So yeah, it was interesting to see that. I was happy to see that most of the intentions and drivers behind implementing this were coming from a good place and from people who really wanted to make a difference. In terms of like the ways in which they were kind of implemented, it was interesting because there were different ways in which this was being implemented. Sometimes it was in public schools, sometimes it was in non-formal education, sometimes in private schools.
And we've talked a lot about how it has a positive impact, or how there was a lot of kind of buy-in, no? But were there resistance in your experience, or maybe in the research in general, of education and contemplative practices?
So that was something that I was also kind of interested to see, because before starting my research and doing the interviews, I had read that back in 2012, there was like this big event in the middle of Buenos Aires where they had this meditation event, and first time that, like, you know, a government organization was kind of supporting something like this. And what I read, that there was a lot of resistance because people were concerned that this was like spiritual, and they were concerned about it kind of being implemented into schools because it was like a spiritual or religious practice. However, when I personally interviewed the people that I interviewed, the teachers and the program directors, most of them said that they didn't really find that resistance to it. Most of the parents were very pleased with the practices and found that their child was happier or more focused. However, there was one teacher that did mention that one of her students did not want to practice yoga because her mom said that it was the devil. But you know, it was not mandatory for the children, so they could choose, and so there wasn't too much resistance from the people I interviewed, but it did seem like there were a few cases where there was a concern for, you know, spirituality entering the schools, it being like a spiritual practice.
Of course, for many it is, right? A spiritual practice. Like, for many people, it is a spiritual practice.
Yeah, for many people, it is a spiritual practice. For me personally, it is a spiritual practice. As I interviewed some of the program directors, it was really interesting to see that they all had a different way of understanding what it was. So for one program director teacher, it was purely biological. It's a purely biological process that allows you to have less stress and be more focused. Whereas another program director was like, this is you connecting to your spirit and yourself and something higher than you. And, you know, so it was, so some people do believe that is a spiritual practice. And I personally do feel that it is a spiritual practice for myself, but I don't necessarily think that that has to be the case for everyone, especially if it's implemented in schools.
It is always a fine boundary, no, between education and spirituality that one must take into account. And if some people think that there is and it is, and some don't, so what is actually the values that, because it looks like that you can kind of pick and choose what meaning you can give to it. Is that one of the benefits kind of these practices?
That you can pick, yeah, I think the benefit, like, once again, like, it's not just what you do, but like why and how you do it. So if you, of course, the meaning that you give to something is going to directly impact the outcome of it. You know, whatever meaning that you kind of give to it is going to directly impact like how you experience that. So if someone's like, okay, like, you know, I feel like meditation is purely biological and it helps me to reduce my stress, and that's what they believe it to do, then, you know, when they practice that, those are hopefully going to be the benefits that they reap from that. However, another person that might say, hey, you know, like, I really feel like I'm connecting deeply to my spirit, and like, that's what this means for me, they're going to be more likely to have that experience because that was that meaning that they gave to it. But in either case, regardless of what meaning you give to it, I think there's gonna be benefits. However, I do personally think that, this is just my own personal opinion, because I have studied, you know, some ancient practices, that there is a danger in taking away some of the core values of these ancient practices. So it's happened, you know, over the past couple of years, you know, mindfulness, meditation, yoga becoming more trendy, and now has been termed, some people term it like McMindfulness, where it's like people are only kind of using this to like achieve and achieve and achieve. And there's nothing wrong with using meditation to help you to achieve things. Like, that's great. And like, that's amazing. But I do think personally, in my part, and some other critics out there have said, like, if you're teaching meditation, but you're not teaching those core ancient values, such as loving kindness and compassion, then you're not really going to reap the real benefits of the practice.
After your research, how do you keep thinking, or, I don't know, having ambitions about this connection between these practices and education? How do you integrate it in your daily work or your personal kind of, journey or thoughts?
Definitely. So I am a kids yoga instructor. My free time, I teach kids yoga in the park, and I, every single time that I do that, I just feel like so connected to like the joy of children and just seeing how it's so easy, actually so much easier for them to kind of pick up. You would think, oh no, it's so difficult for kids to focus and do this and that. It's like, actually kids are, at least in my opinion, so in tune with their intuition and more connected to themselves because they haven't been alive that long, right? And they haven't been conditioned to society that long. So in my daily life, yeah, I keep that connection by continuing to teach kids yoga, and I try to bring those values into the practice. You know, it's not just about doing those yoga moves. It's not about the way that you look when you're doing that yoga move. It's not about being better than the person next to you, right? It's not about, oh, well, I need to do this yoga move because then it makes me better or something like that. It's like actually something fun for the kids and something that they can learn to connect to themselves and connect to other children and understand their emotions and just have fun. So that's one way that I'm still connecting it to education. And then also right now I'm working for a company called Homer Learning, where we create educational apps for kids to help them learn how to read and do math. And now we are also working on bringing more social emotional. I mean, we trickle social emotional skills into all of our games. So yeah, in my daily work there, I've done some yoga classes for them live, and also just making sure that, of course, right now we don't have like an app. we don't have an app for kids to teach them how to do meditation or yoga. But I do believe that we are bringing those social emotional skills into the app by showing children that being aware of their emotions is important, and like growing confidence in themselves and finding a love of learning. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely would like to bring more of that to my company. And I believe that we are in the process of doing that.
We are almost getting to the end of this episode. Do you still want to share something, last thoughts, or do you still think there is something important for people to think about when thinking about yoga, meditation, mindfulness, and education?
I don't know if I want to say we all know, but I think most of us have seen that there is a lot of research out there that shows that there are a lot of benefits of meditation for not only adults, but for children. And they have done research in schools to show, you know, it's beneficial for their physical health, their emotional health, their focus, you know, a lot of different things. However, I do want to mention as something that I realized in my research as well is that meditation, yoga, and mindfulness are tools, right? But they aren't necessarily going to fix everything alone, right? When it comes to education, we can't just be like meditation, yoga, and mindfulness, or like if, or in the workspace, if someone's like, you can't just be like, well, just go meditate, right? Because there's larger things at play. So I think it's important to realize that while meditation, yoga, mindfulness can be really beneficial for the students and the teachers, it's important to remember that it's not going to be a cure-all, right? Like, we still need to talk about the things behind the stress. Okay, like, why are kids stressed to begin with? Why are teachers stressed to begin with? You know, are they getting paid a fair wage? Like, these are some of the things that some teachers mentioned in my research as well. So just wanted to point that out, that it doesn't mean that meditation, mindfulness is meant to do those things, but it is going to help children and teachers to have all of these benefits, but it's not the cure all for everything. You know, it has a purpose in education, but there's a lot, education is very complex. And so we've got to continue to do our part.
Of course, it cannot without systemic changes and really policies that tackle inequality, we won't achieve this fairness, or at least tackles the most important education issues for sure. Okay, thanks a lot for sharing this moment with us. It was very nice and inspiring. And I hope everyone enjoyed this episode. Please follow us on our social media, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and also visit our website. We would be very happy to read your comments. And thank you to Rachel.
Thank you so much.
Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Bye.